Today on the Bill Kelly Show on 900 CHML.
Well, with Hurricanes Ian and Fiona over the last couple of weeks, you may have been spared a direct hit here in Ontario. But experts say the ripple effect on supply chains is coming our way. That's going to hit us pretty hard. One example, for instance, is food. Grocers that source from Atlantic Canada and the southern United States could pass on the higher cost to Canadian consumers. That's you and me. And that impact could include things like potatoes from PEI or citrus from Florida, certainly. Canadian importers do have the option of finding other producers to deal with disrupted supply chains, but that could come at a cost too. So these experts say that while the impact of major storms on supply chains could be intense, they might also be short-lived. Global's Ann Gaviola has a report.
Certainly anything in the natural resource sector on the east coast of Canada would be affected, the fisheries. A lot of people probably don't recognize is the substantial lumber operations that we have on the east coast.
Consumer impact includes price spikes at the pumps, offsetting some of that relief we've seen in recent weeks, and higher prices for food. Already, the 1-2 punch of Fiona and Ian has impacted key crops in Florida, including citrus. Orange juice futures jumped this week, meaning that glass of OJ will likely cost you more soon. You can also expect to pay more for avocados and other items that we import from the Sunshine State. Our weaker currency is an inflationary factor, too, because most goods affected are priced in U.S. dollars.
So that's the challenge that we have right now. What are we going to do about this? Well, the Ontario Chamber of Commerce has come up with a paper that I think addresses an awful lot of these concerns. It says urgent action is needed to prevent a bending supply chain from breaking, and we're not too far from that, apparently. Joining us to talk about the report and some of the solutions that we should be considering here is Michelle Eaton. Michelle, of course, is the Vice President of Public Affairs with the Ontario Chamber of Commerce. Michelle, pleasure to have you back in the program. Thanks so much for the time today.
Thanks so much for having me on, Bill. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, as I with you, but I mean, this caught my attention and I started reading this over last night. We've got a lot of concerns here, and like so many other things, and I think you and I talked about this in the past, a lot of the stuff that we're dealing with here and that we need to be addressing here existed before the pandemic, but the pandemic just exacerbated the situation. And as you say, this is a supply chain that was probably under pressure before. It's under intense pressure right now. We can't afford to let it break. We have to do something here.
Absolutely, Bill. And it's everything from climate disasters, geopolitical conflict, trade wars that are exacerbating some of the issues. I mean, while it was amplified by the public health and economic crisis that we've experienced over the last couple of years, part of the issue is decades of underinvestment in infrastructure and public policy choices that led to supply chains that are fragile across a number of sectors and products in Canada. So we really need to see that bold whole of government action to strengthen our domestic competitiveness and supply chain resilience. A lot of businesses right now are looking and seeing how to bolster their supply chain strategies. A lot of them were functioning with a just-in-time kind of model, and now they're looking at just-in-case delivery models. This ongoing crunch of bottlenecks, it continues to bear down on a number of sectors. It looks like things are looking a little bit better with the global context, so there's some hope on the horizon, but the private sector is doing its part. We'd like to see government eliminate some of those barriers, reduce red tape, streamline the process for industry, and we really need action now to reduce that those future risks, because a lot of these things won't happen overnight, and it will take considerable time and dedication.
And in the long term, I understand that, you know, we have to be concerned about climate and the impact that environmental issues are going to have. And we saw that happen, of course, with the hurricanes and flooding and things of this nature. And we need to do something about that. But in the short term, as the paper indicates here, Michelle, we have to shore up our supply chain infrastructure. And that, as you say, is multifaceted. And maybe the first way the place to start here is employment. You know, the people that are working in that industry. I mean, you know, when I see this statistic that you included in the report here, currently we are $23,000 truck drivers short of what were needed to move goods around in this province. 23,000 fewer truck drivers means it's going to take longer to get things to market. It's going to cost more to get them to market. You know, we have to do something to address that right off the bat.
Absolutely. And earlier this year, we released a policy primer called by my colleague Esther on our policy team. It's supply chain disruptions and delays. So folks want to read more about the issue, they can go to our website and look up that primer, because it looks at some of the snapshot of the issues with some short and long-term recommendations. This is also a subject we're going to be talking about. We have our upcoming Ontario Economic Summit, November 22nd to 23rd, for anyone that's interested, that's listening, that wants to come join us. And we're going to actually be partnering with the Monk School of Business and the Monk's, their hub, which is their mission to produce and promote insights, analysis, and debate about dynamic things happening in Canada. So we're going to be doing a Monk-style debate, be it resolved, in Ontario's need, does Ontario's need for reshoring as part of its growth agenda, looking at that just-in-time, just-in-case manufacturing strategies. A lot of the things come down to labor is one of the big things. Of course, it's no secret, we have a bit of an immigration backlog in Canada. We actually don't have the data to tell us why people are moving or where they're moving. So the data would be helpful. And something you and I have talked about before, Bill, we need more economic immigrants. It's something that has been in the news lately. In Canada, the federal government gives each province a set allocation of economic immigrants each year. In 2021, that was around 9,000, which is totally inefficient for the employment that's available in the province. I know the province has been in talks with the federal government about making that amount much higher, and it needs to happen.
When we look at this, and as you say, the shortcomings are they're fixable. I mean, that's what it comes down to. The reason for a lot of these, as you say, is outdated policies by governments. Is there a willingness for governments to sit down with industry at this stage, Michelle, and say, okay, what can we do here? I think they're aware of the immigration problem. And they've attempted, I guess, to try to streamline that. When you've got the report here that says 62% of sectors in Ontario here are all facing labor shortages, I don't know if using the word crisis is too extreme here. I mean, we're really getting into a very tenuous situation here.
Well, there's a lot of dynamics at play, Bill, because you have the labor shortage, immigration backlog, we have high inflation, supply chain problems slightly improving. The business's ability to take on debt still remains a significant restraint coming out of the pandemic. Still rising costs, there's a lot of things happening all at once. It's a bit of a kind of perfect storm. We're amid the highest inflation we've had in 40 years, which is a major obstacle for Canadian businesses. One thing I would say, though, on government, particularly Ontario, they've been steadfast in looking at ways to make it easier for foreign credentials to be recognized. You've seen Monty McNaughton in the news quite a bit as of late, talking about different initiatives they are doing to get folks to come to Ontario and get them upskilled in certain professions where there's labor market demands. Federally, there is a national supply chain task force where they're consulting with industry and looking at solutions so that they can be done from that level. And then provincially in Ontario, there's Supply Ontario, which is looking at how they can transform and modernize public procurement. Folks might have noticed during the pandemic, the Ontario government was quite agile in solicited and unsolicited help to support some of those health supply efforts. I actually heard that the premier was picking up the phone himself to make sure that we had the things we needed to weather that storm. So it's on the radar of governments. They're taking action, and none of these things will happen overnight. You have a supply chain that, some of the infrastructure is operating a kind of 1980s pen and paper. And then on the flip side, you have labor shortages. So something's got to give, and those areas need to be addressed because they don't happen overnight.
Well, and the other element to this too, and the truism here with economics, is if we don't do it and somebody else beats it to us, business flows that way as opposed to us. And they're not going to say, oh, Canada's got their act together now. Okay, we're going to go back. We've got to act on this right now. And we've got, as you say, remain competitive in this global market. Because if we don't, if we fall behind into a tier two economy, it's very, very difficult to try to get back on your feet.
Absolutely. And what we're facing isn't unique in Canada. Every country is facing these things where that war for talent is high. And they're looking at how do they get people to go into certain STEM professions, trades. You'd mentioned trucking earlier, because that with the aging, and we've talked about this before, with the aging workforce, we have people retiring, we have birth declines in the country. It's not going to get, things aren't going to get better. It's going to get more challenging. So having those workforce, targeted workforce strategies, for example, for a trucking industry, promoting the transportation and supply chain industries as viable career paths through education campaigns, training incentives, immigration pathways and agreements, those all can help to bolster the sector so that you know, the spending supply chain doesn't break, as we had mentioned in our recent release.
And I mean, we've talked a lot about government's involvement, and that's going to be key to this whole thing. But private sector has a role to play here too. Is the industry and is the economic industry in this province pivoting toward this and understanding that this is where the focus has to be for at least the short term anyway?
A lot of the companies I've spoken to, they're really looking at their strategies and how do they strengthen their supply chains? How do they make sure that they're never caught in a situation where there's gaps in supply and their delivery. And I think with the economic headwinds, a lot of people have been talking about that we're entering a recession. A lot of economists have spoken to that. A lot of companies, I think, are looking at how they make sure that they're strong and resilient going into an economic downturn.
We were talking earlier about the impact that the global situation is having here, but, you know, natural disasters and things of this nature, we can't prevent that. But I guess the metaphor I was thinking of, it's like a house that's, you know, in the line where a hurricane is going. You can't change the path of the hurricane, but you can make sure that the house is going to be resilient and be able to stand or withstand, really, the sorts of pressures that are going to come on. We're a little lax in that over the past, I guess, assuming that, no, come on, none of this is all going to happen at once. Well, it did. And we've got to learn from that, don't we?
Well, I think with supply chains, it's something until there's problems, it's probably not where, I mean, government tends to focus their energy, sure, public policies on areas that are more immediate of nature and within their mandates. Until you see problems in the supply chain, the public policy tends to not turn in that direction. I'm pleased to see that both the provincial and federal governments are looking at how do they bolster the supply chains. That public-private collaboration is so essential to explore potential support measures, particularly for small businesses still recovering from lost revenues. I heard some real horror stories from small business owners throughout the last couple of years. And the workforce development strategies, you've seen, you know, for example, provincially, they've done a real push towards some of the trades that are in demand and require more people. So those immigration pathways, training incentives and agreements, super important. But then updating our ports and infrastructure to the 21st century, and that even means getting our broadband and strengthening those kind of things. But there really needs to be a formal supply chain infrastructure assessment to address those bottlenecks and those inefficiencies along the supply chain.
That's an important part of it. And I was pleased as well to see that some governments are starting to address that too, about broadband. You know, if you travel around from time to time, maybe you did some traveling this summer, you're going to hit dead spots every now and then. And you figure, well, what an inconvenience. If you're in business, it's more than an inconvenience. I mean, there's got to be more attention paid to that. That's one of the keys, I think, to 21st century economics, isn't it? To make sure that you're wired and that you're ready to go.
Absolutely. And if you think about, I mean, there was a lot of support throughout the pandemic for small businesses getting for digital adoption, for getting online. And we've heard some great stories for folks that have leveraged some of the grants to get their business. Their business has actually done really well because all of a sudden they're not just serving their local community, but they're serving across Canada and international markets. But the competitiveness globally will continue. And if we want to remain competitive, addressing some of those shortfalls in broadband, because broadband's important. And I think you know, sometimes people don't equate this, but even farming has become so digital and it's modernized quite a bit. So for across every sector, you need to make sure that you're connected, and we can't afford to let our rural and remote communities fall behind.
It's all tied together, and of course this ties into the conversation you and I had a week or so ago about interprovincial trade barriers too, and the work that needs to be done. It's the old adage, when you're getting into a situation like this, I guess everything should be on the table, shouldn't it, Michelle, to say, okay, how can we do this better? In the whole big picture, it may be only a small part of it, but you know, if we address all of those small parts, we're going to get positive change here.
Well, it makes me, interprovincial trade and labor mobility, it's a solution. It costs a lot of money. It costs regular folks a lot of money. It costs businesses a lot of money. And particularly with labor, it should be easy for people to be able to, I mean, it's kind of like when it's sometimes a lot cheaper to travel to Europe than it is across Canada. And sometimes, yeah, I look at some of our interprovincial trade or labor issues as that way. We're just making it very difficult. That it's a lot of sectors. And there's a lot of data out there supporting the need for change. Out west, there's been a lot of mutual recognition agreements that have been made. Would love to see the Ontario government make some moves on that, just so it's easier for folks to come here and work in their profession. Because it's a shame if people from across Canada or people from other countries come here and then they can't work in their own profession, and they, you know, especially for ones that we really need people in.
Exactly. It's a great piece and a very important policy paper that I hope the government is going to read. Michelle, thank you so much for the time today. As always, appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Bill. Have a great day.
You too. Michelle Eaton, who is the VP of Public Affairs at the Ontario Chamber of Commerce.
The Bill Kelly Show, weekdays from 9 to noon on 900 CHML.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.